From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, well, good evening, and welcome to episode 48 of Greener Views. Yes. I'm Daryl Whalen, along with Randy Parcell and Michael Schwartz. And joining us this evening is Robert Landis from, for all purposes, he's from Capital Media, which we'll touch on a little bit, but mostly he's here to talk about bicycling and being a bicycle rider and a bicyclist and bicycling in Seattle and Port Angeles that we just found out and and throughout other areas in the Northwest and perhaps far beyond that. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. It's brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. If you'd like to advertise or be a sponsor or donate, please contact 206-650-4587 or you can email us info@greenerviews.net. So how do I know the guest? We talked with Larry, and I forgot, what was Larry's last name? He was just
What was his last name?
Do you guys remember? Swanson. Larry Swanson.
Very good.
Good thing we got people whose brains aren't fried in this room. We talked to Larry Swanson, was just a few episodes back, and we met the same way, the meeting. We were at the luncheon down there through Green Drinks, and we met downtown, and there was the three of us. And we sat down there and chit-chatted about life and talked about the radio show and talked about what each other had going on. And I guess somehow Larry had led on to you that this was a pretty good thing to be a part of, and you got in touch with us and said that you wanted to do it. And so we're real blessed for that. And so I look forward to finding out more about you. Why don't we start by giving us a... Well, do you want to give a brief introduction to yourself and maybe just touch on the Capital Media thing and then we'll get into the bicycling thing?
Yeah, Capital Media is a web design and development
company. Do you want to say your name first?
Sure, that's a good place to start. Robert Landis is my name.
Hey!
And welcome. And I've been running a web design and development company for the last 7 years in Seattle. And it's been an interesting time to start my own company. I've never run a company before, so it's been fascinating to learn all the ins and outs of running a business, how to manage people, how to manage clients. You know, it can be challenging at times, but also it's a lot of fun, too. And it's really great to deliver a really high-quality product to folks. So that's a little bit about me.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're very humble about that because when I met you, I had no idea that that was your company.
Oh. Got it.
Yeah, you just played it really casual.
Yeah.
So so let's get right into the bicycling thing for here for a while.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about your how you got into the world of what was it? Is it bicycling or is there some other kind of terminology that you know us old folks don't know or are really kind of not in on?
Sure. That's a great one. The distinction I like to make is there's bikers. That's people on motorcycles, and then there's cyclists.
Okay, so it's not bicyclists, it's cyclists.
It's cyclists. That's typically what most people describe it as.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're not a biker by any chance, are you?
No, I'm not a biker.
Not that that's a bad thing.
No, it's a great thing.
So why don't you talk about how you got into bicycling or cycling? I'll get that down before the end of the episode. How you got into cycling and kind of where you are with it now and the transition a little bit.
Well, when I was growing up in Port Angeles, which you mentioned before, I loved riding my bicycle. And this is back in the day when it was like, you know, parents didn't have any sort of concerns about letting their children just take off for the day. So I literally would take off on a Saturday morning on my Schwinn 5-speed, which I love that bike. I remember I spent $69 for it at, some hardware store. And anyway, so I'd ride my bike all over town, no cell phone, not even a quarter with me, and just have a great time. And I'd come back home, and I always had this great adventure all day long being gone with my friends. So that's where I started. And then, of course, when I got older and the bicycle became less interesting to me, 16 years old, I got a new car and put the bicycle in the back garage and sort of forgot about it. Then I went to college a few years later, and getting on a bicycle around college campus, University of Washington, is fantastic. So I took it up again for a while, but it was more like just a means to an end. And then I put it away again, and then came back to it after I got married about 22 years ago. And first off, I just said, well, you know, I keep driving my car to the post office, and it's like this little teeny ride drive on my car, and it's kind of like this repetitive thing. It's like, why don't I just get a bicycle and ride my bike there? So I got this nice little mountain bike, and I started riding it to the post office and there and back. And after a while, I thought, well, gee, why don't I go to the grocery store? That'd be kind of fun. And then after that, I was like, well, why don't I get my wife involved in biking, you know, so we can go places together. So that's kind of how it evolved, and I got really into it and started really enjoying it. So
when you talked about putting your cycle aside, you weren't talking literally about the Schwinn, and you didn't take that back out each time. You're not still on the Schwinn. You've got a different kind of a mountain bike now.
I wish I had that Schwinn. Oh, man, I wish I had that Schwinn. It's such a beautiful bike. But no, I that long got, you know, sent away, and I actually got another bike when I went to college, and that long disappeared as well. And when I got my, you know, more recent bike, when I was 38 or so, it was just a standard mountain bike, and I don't have that anymore either, but it was just a plain bike just to get out and ride, you know, so it was fun.
Great. Yeah, you know, you were talking about as a child, they didn't have such a regard for us going out to just play. I remember my mom used to even say, go play in traffic, but I think she still loved me. But, you know, you were talking about, why don't you elaborate a little bit on one of your childhood trips? Cause I'll tell you one of mine really quick was, I lived, and by the way, I have no concept. My memory is bad enough, but as far as like concept of like distance and stuff many years ago, you know, nearly 35, 40 years ago. But I remember us getting up early in the morning and riding a bicycle 5-6 hours to get to the beach, you know, in a different county and stuff like that. And and riding through the country. And it was just such an adventure. And then, you know, stopping adventure for lunch somewhere and then coming back, and it was like dark outside. I mean, literally 11 hours on a bicycle. And we probably spent in like an hour at the destination because it was so far away. Do you have any one particular trip that you want to share with us?
Well, in Port Angeles, there's something called Ettis Hook, which is kind of this jetty of land that comes out and forms this harbor in Port Angeles. So that was a favorite place to go. So I remember one morning getting up with my friend Joe, and we got on our bikes and we rode down the hill, and, you know, like your adventure, you know, we got there. It took us about an hour and a half to get there. And we had to go through this really horrible section where there's log trucks and big, heavy equipment moving through. It was really pretty kind of scary. Anyway, we get to Ettis Hook, and then our favorite thing to do was kind of walk on the log booms. Mm. So we put our bikes aside, and we go out there and walk in these log booms. And there's literally logs that were, like, literally upright. You could actually step on them, but they were moving up and down in the water. And, of course, we fell in, you know. That was invariably what was going to happen. So
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it was fun, you know. Yeah. We fell in, and... And, you know, every time we do it, the guys from the mill would try and shoo us away because they didn't want us walking the log booms, you know, because we're going to hurt ourselves or whatever. But anyway, I remember getting soaking wet and getting back on my bike and thinking nothing of it and just riding my bike home. And it was just like one of these great adventures that nowadays I think people would be so afraid to let your child go more than 10 minutes away from their home. It's really sad to me because I think it's a huge loss for children.
Yeah, I remember the banana seats and the making the bicycles with the long, like, what do they call them, forks and stuff. And
The Stingray
and, like, driving around. Like, I guess we thought we were bikers, but we were barely actually cyclists.
Exactly.
But, it's really exciting. And then you get into the cars and everything. We were talking before the show started that, you know, when we get to the age when we're able to, like, legally drive and stuff like that, You put the bicycle thing aside, and the truth of the matter is it's in many, many ways it's a much better place for us to really be, just our mind and our brain and our body and everything else. So what about now? I mean, what is your bicycle life like today in Seattle? What part of the town do you live in?
I live in the North End, just a little bit south of Shoreline.
Okay, so there's a lot of good trails over up through there.
Yeah, there are some trails. Personally, I avoid trails. They scare me. So I have three bicycles now, which I love, and I commute to work pretty much every day. So I get on my bike and ride into the city.
And I know that's downtown. And how many miles is that?
It's about 10 miles each way.
Sweet.
Yeah, so it's a good ride. But Seattle's a nice city because, you go 10 miles in any direction, you make a lot of progress.
Yeah.
So it's really pretty good. So I do that every day, and then I do rides on the weekend. And I really enjoy just getting out because I find that for myself personally, I get so relaxed on my bicycle. And I really enjoy being outside, breathing fresh air. And I'm not stressed. Driving my car, I feel very stressed. I feel confined behind the wheel, and I feel pressured by traffic. When I'm on my bicycle, I'm just free. I just feel really free.
So what about your wife? Is she doing the riding with you at all now?
Well, she did for a while. We're divorced now, but we're great friends.
Yeah.
So we actually did 8 unsupported bike trips when we were married. It was fantastic. We went to Provence, France. We did a bike trip in Utah. We did several trips in California, the Oregon coast, all over the place, and it was great.
What is an unsupported bike trip?
Good question. a lot of people go on bike trips where they basically have a van that follows them with all their gear.
Oh, okay.
And we carried all our gear with us, so we're kind of hardcore, you know. So we
that
carried
is hardcore.
Like, yeah, so it was fun.
And I know when I met you that your wife had made some kind of we're not necessarily here to talk about her, but I do recall you saying that you're still friends.
Oh, great
friends. And that she had been writing some like health books and stuff herself, correct?
Absolutely. She published a very successful book in 1994 called Body Fueling. She sold 100,000 copies, really successful.
And isn't she revamping it
She's
or something?
She's thinking about it.
Oh, okay. That
She's
was
thinking
it,
right? about it because the publishing world has changed so much. The possibilities are endless.
So what do you see as you know, what do you see as the necessity of being a bicycle rider as opposed to the car? I guess I'm probably not framing that question as well as I'd like, but so why don't you talk about your experience of being a cyclist as opposed to being a driver? Because I know that you have a car as well.
Right, right.
Can you elaborate on the differences and what you feel about the one of them being different and how they're different?
I can. Like I alluded to before, when I'm on my bicycle, it's a very freeing experience. It's very relaxed. I feel at peace, and I'm getting a little bit of exercise going when I'm riding. Whereas in my car, I feel very confined, restricted, and having to like conform to these very rigid rules as well as the traffic. I'm conforming to the traffic. So it's very confining to me, and I don't really enjoy it that much. I really enjoy riding my bike, though. It's, like I said, it's very peaceful. It's like meditation to me in some ways. And I always feel so good when I get to my destination. It's just a great way to relax.
So we were talking before the show about I know I've been in Seattle 10 years now, and I remember one of the things that I had kept hearing and seeing myself was that Portland was a trendsetter in the bicycle world, and of course I believe Seattle's not too far behind. And what do you know about the attraction? Is it because of the age of the general age of the people, or the type of industry that's
Good
around
question.
Here? Or
you know, it's I think it's a personal attitude. Northwest has always kind of differentiated itself from the rest of the country, and I think that there's sort of an independent spirit that lives here. People want to believe in getting out there and doing things on their own. And I think Portland has really set the trend because their government was very active even as early as the 70s in putting together bike lanes and really thinking about an infrastructure for bicycles that was really progressive at the time. Davis, California is the same way. They have the advantage, of course, it's very flat there and it's very sunny there, which makes it really nice. But Portland also has really captured it. Seattle is somewhat of a laggard in that regard. It's not quite as progressive as Portland. And even other cities, like we're talking about for the show, L.A. is coming online. New York's doing some really big things, even Chicago. So it's really becoming more and more of a commonplace thing to see bicycles being more accepted, and it's a really good thing. I think it'll help relieve traffic congestion. It helps people get in shape, and you know, it solves some of the common problems we're having right now.
Mm. Yeah, I know Michael was talking about, but we were talking about this before the show, and Michael lived in L.A. for quite a long time, and he just went back to do a project back there, and he had said that he noticed a lot more bicycles than in the past. And I have heard about Chicago quite a bit as well.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, I don't remember what Cleveland was like, Ohio, where I grew up. I think, I don't know. I imagine that they're starting to get bicycle lanes and stuff like that.
Well, they have a huge 100-mile trail there, don't they?
Yeah, that runs along like all the whole Lake Erie and stuff,
beautiful.
I believe.
It's really beautiful.
Metro Park.
Oh, the Metro Park.
It goes into Oberlin now, too.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful parks, too,
it's
over
amazing.
There. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool that you know that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember going back there.
So let's talk about bicycle safety. How safe is it to be a cyclist in this city?
Yeah. Well, it's how do I answer that? If you look at the statistics, which isn't necessarily helpful, but about 200 motorists in King County get killed every year in automobiles, 30 pedestrians die, and 2 cyclists die on average.
Wow.
So if you look at those statistics, and of course there's a lot more pedestrians and cyclists and cars and things like that, it's I can say from personal experience in the last 20 years since I've been riding, it's a lot safer to ride now. And there's lots of reasons for that. I think it's because motorists have become more attuned to cyclists. And you see that particularly in certain parts of town, like Green Lake, for example. People are really conscious of cyclists there because there's so many of them. Same with pedestrians. West Seattle is more so that way. Kent, not so much. But if you look at the demographic and you there's a huge saturation of cyclists, you'll usually find people who are more bicycle conscious. So sure. I think it's gotten better. The bike infrastructure has improved dramatically. There's more bike lanes available. Probably my biggest pet peeve is, more so than bike lanes, I want to see smooth paved roads. Because for a cyclist, it's really difficult to ride on a beat up road. Even an automobile, it's not very comfortable, but an automobile has like massive suspension and all sorts of, you know, things designed to cushion the driver from it. But a bicycle, you're right there and it's boom, 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 it's really hard on you. So that's really what I hope the city can keep doing and improving is that a good example of that is Ravenna Avenue was a notoriously horrible road up until recently and they repaved it. I would avoid that road purposely because it was so beat up and now it's beautiful. It's like smooth and it's just wonderful. So safety wise, I think that there's a certain level of risk, but there's a certain level of risk of being sedentary too. You know, you can die of heart disease or cancer from not exercising. And I think there's always trade-offs in life, right?
Yeah. No, thank you for that. That's a great – in fact, I was just writing down how healthy is it to be an avid bicyclist. I mean, I think I have some idea, but can you give us an inside scoop on that? I haven't been an avid bicyclist, like I said, since those trips that I
sure.
took went out, like – a long time ago.
Yeah.
And
fun.
There was a guy that we had on involved with the show when Michael was out of town. Him and his brother came and videotaped it. And this guy, I don't really remember how many years he's been here in Seattle, but I don't know that he's ever even had a car. And he bicycles like you, like everywhere. And he looks fantastic. And I know how old you are, and I'm not going to say anything, but you look fantastic. And I'm
Thanks.
Thinking that the bicycle thing must have something to do with it.
It does. You know, it's a great way to get cardiovascular exercise or cardiovascular fitness, I should say. And, of course, like any exercise, you have to kind of treat it like exercise to keep improving and enhancing your ability. But I think overall, just the fact that you get on a bicycle and pedal for a while is going to be a huge improvement over doing nothing. So I think it's a big, big advantage. I do also believe firmly, though, that you should do something besides just cycling. I think that it's not a fully well-rounded exercise. Other things need to take place, but it's a great start. I mean, it's a great start.
What do you know of as being something that's a good combination with bicycling?
That's a great question. My personal preference is doing CrossFit, if you're familiar with what CrossFit is.
I don't know that much about it, but I just saw something online the other day that you know, we're generally in the same age range, and they say that folks that are over 50, they say CrossFit is supposed to be a fantastic exercise.
It is. You know, it's core based, and it's one of the things about it is when you do intensive sprinting anaerobic exercise, it generates what's called human growth hormone. And that's basically the body's triggering mechanism to say you're going to stay young. So it releases into your system. So it's a great anti-aging exercise. And it's also it just strengthens your whole body. So it's not about looking like a bodybuilder, but it's more like becoming a well-rounded, solid person. So that's why I love it. But it's challenging. You have to push yourself.
What about meditative type stuff or yoga type of stuff where it's the stretching and everything?
Yeah. That's a great point, too. I used to do yoga. I don't do it anymore, but I do meditate on a regular basis. I find that to be, of course, that's separate from cycling entirely, but it's a very peaceful and tranquil and really essential part of my life right now in terms of like my sleep and everything else. So it's really, really important. But I think, you know, for some people, yoga is a really good practice. It's just not my thing.
So when you're really in the groove of your bicycling and you're on a trip or a run or something, is safe to say that that's pretty meditative as well?
Absolutely.
So it's really not so different.
No, it's very much meditation. When I do a bike trip and I'm on the road for 8 or 9 hours a day, it just becomes this very meditative, peaceful process, and it's so amazing. I mean, one of the great things is when you finally arrive at your destination, you usually order 2 entrees of food and eat the whole thing, you know, and then a shower never felt so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, food never tasted so great and a beer never tasted so great. And it's just this great, and sleep never felt so good, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just like this whole thing, and it just kind of builds in itself over a course of 2 weeks.
You really push yourself and you really build up an appreciation for a lot of stuff too.
Yeah, the simple things, right? The simple things that we take for granted every day, but you really, really appreciate them.
Well, ultimately, isn't that? I believe that's what our health and you know, health and longevity and our relationship
Absolutely.
With our body and who we are, that's really, really what it's all about.
A big part of it.
So what about training? Have you taken any cycle training, or have you given training to other people, or is there something that you would
Great
recommend
question.
For someone like myself that doesn't do bicycling?
Sure.
How to get into something like that?
Great question. I guess it depends on what you want to do. Like if you wanted to race cyclocross or road racing or something like that, that's a whole different thing. But if you just want to get on a bike and like, oh, I want to go to the grocery store, or I want to go to work, or I want to do something like that, that's a very different sort of approach. So my advice to people who just want to become more like what I call a transportational cyclist as opposed to a commuter, because it's more encompassing,
is to
buy a very inexpensive bike. And this is kind of the advice I would have given myself. I would be talking to myself 22 years ago. Buy an inexpensive bike, learn how to use it, learn how to fix it, learn how to repair it, and try it out for a while. And if it's your thing, great. Get another bike. If it's not, then go do something else. Did I answer that question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to be able to ride up a hill without like having to like pull over and push my bike. When I came from Ohio, which is extremely fat, I think you can pretty much bicycle across the entire state of Ohio, and you probably wouldn't even hit a hill. And I came out here, and I did actually bring a bicycle out here. It wasn't a very good one. But, the first time I tried to, like, ride up the hills and everything, you can definitely tell how not good a shape you're in very, very quickly. It's quite a barometer for your
– Yeah.
Yeah. So what about bicycle clubs? Are there? I know that there's at least one, if not several, good bicycle clubs. Is there any that you recommend or that you know about
Absolutely.
Or that you're a part of?
Yeah. The Cascade Bicycle Club is the largest bicycle club in the country, and I highly recommend.
In the country. Right.
Anybody who wants to get involved in cycling at whatever level, it's a great club to join because they'll help people learn how to become a commuter. They'll help them with their gear. They'll give you low-cost solutions for, like, finding a good helmet. And it's just a real practical approach to, like, getting into cycling because they really want to encourage people to do that. They do a lot of things. They do the STP rides. They sponsor all sorts of other rides. They do advocacy in Olympia to make sure that, you know, bikes are fairly represented as far as, you know, when new roads are paved and things like that. So it's a really good organization. I highly recommend it.
And that's a nonprofit resource for people to – just generally get information
Absolutely.
Regardless of what your level you're at, and you could say, hey, I don't know anything about bicycles and I want to get something, and
they'll
work with you
out.
And
they'll help you, gladly help you, and love it. Really great.
You brought up the advocacy thing, which is something that that I wanted to touch on a little bit because of the laws. So you grew up in this area, and then you said that you got back into bicycling pretty regularly, what you said, in your 30s?
Late 30s.
So it's been a while. How have you seen the laws? And, I mean, just in the last 10 years that I've been in Seattle, I've seen a lot more bicycle lanes just put in over even the last handful of years. And what about from the prospect of the laws and stuff around bicycling? Have you noticed, or what do you know about in that area?
Not so much about the laws, but I do know that Seattle does have a bicycle master plan that they're putting together, and it's a work in progress. And there's a meeting once a week that it's called a traffic advisory board that's held in downtown Seattle. And last meeting they were talking about trying to get all of these different plans coordinated, like the new 520 bridge is coming in. There's a big debate about Portage Bay, since there's not going to be a bike lane on that section of the bridge itself. So that was a big point of controversy right there. I lost my train of thought. Let's see. Okay. Portage Bay. Anyway, as far as laws, I don't know what the laws are specifically, but I do see a positive trend in, bike lanes, different infrastructure being put in. And this bicycle master plan is going to be the key, because it wraps everything together, and trying to coordinate with private businesses as well as the public, the city and the state, to coordinate bike lanes throughout the city and essentially make it so you can get around the city on a bike, period.
Yeah. And you've seen that happen, I think, quite a bit. Do you see that? Do you think that people are really open to it? I mean, do you sense an entitlement of people that have the big, huge, ton and double ton motorized vehicles?
SUVs, yeah.
Do you think that they have an entitlement, sense of entitlement over bicycles, and sense that incorporating bicycles and the different types of transportation is necessarily a good or a bad thing? Do you have any take on any of that?
You know, there's a lot of controversy about that, and I think that I think the main thing that needs to happen is there needs to be sort of an awareness for people in automobiles and people in and bicycles to watch out for each other and interact as traffic. And in conversations I've had with people, they always have the story about the cyclist who ran the red light, cut them off. They got really scared. They were really frightened that they were going to hurt this person. And that's a really tragic scenario. And honestly, I'll admit, I used to be that guy years ago, and I don't do that anymore.
I know.
I stop at stoplights. I make sure I follow the laws. And I think if there could be some sort of cohesive, consistent, cyclists following the rules, cars following the rules, it could make a much more peaceful environment. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've seen that happen a lot more. A lot fewer cyclists are actually blowing through red lights and doing things like that than I've seen before. So, but there's a lot of work to be done. And I think a big part of it has to do with education. So when you take your driver's exam, for example, I think there should be a special part of it where, there should be questions about how to deal with a bicycle next to you in an automobile.
I agree with that 100%. In fact, when I asked about the question about the entitlement of the automobiles and stuff have, I've noticed an entitlement that some of the bicycle riders and stuff have and stuff. And another thing I noticed is there's people that I don't know, I call it the 50-50 cycling, where 50% of the time they're following the rules of the cyclist. And then, as if it's like a regular vehicle.
Sure.
And then the other half of the time they're following the rule of the pedestrian, and where they're kind of like whatever's working best for them as they're driving down the street.
Yep.
So they'll stop at a light at one point, or another point they'll go through the crosswalk, and it's like, it's kind of confusing. Do you sense any of that stuff?
You're right. And it is confusing, because the laws are set up such a way that, a cyclist can ride on the sidewalk. So that's legal. In Tacoma, it's not. So it's kind of a strange scenario. So you can get on, and you can go from being a vehicle to a pedestrian vehicle. But technically, you don't become a pedestrian until you get off your bike and you're pushing it. You're still a vehicle otherwise. So technically, you should not be riding your bike through a crosswalk unless you're with the light, going across traffic. Those are some things that I do from time to time, I must admit. But more importantly, I think the entitlement thing is what you're kind of getting at with automobiles and with cyclists. I think it's an attitude, and I think that's the thing that needs to begin to you know, I think if there's going to be major changes in making peace with those two constituents, that's the thing that's going to have to kind of go way down. And I think that could happen by education or like campaigns.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I mean, I think it's important just to acknowledge that it's something that's there and something that's real, and
yeah.
And also to believe that it's something that can be worked out and stuff. It's interesting. You said that in Tacoma, you're not allowed to ride your bicycle on the sidewalks.
That used to be the law. Yeah. I haven't checked in it recently, but it used to be the law.
Yeah. So I kind of like, I'm not necessarily sure about the bicycle thing so much, but I think it should be kind of like an either or. I remember when I was a kid in Ohio, I don't even think you were allowed to ride a bicycle on the street. I mean, I think you were only allowed to ride on. Isn't that true? Or I don't know.
No idea.
Maybe that's just what my parents were telling me. But anyhow.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, let's see. Well, let's take a break, and we will have some more stuff that we'll talk around the bicycle type of stuff. And we're here with Robert Landis here with Capital Media, but we're here mostly talking about bicycling and bicycle safety and awareness and all the different opportunities that are available. And we'll be right back with more.
You are listening to Greener Views.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tax and contact. The mass communication is all we have in dwindling fast.
Good evening and welcome back to episode 48 of Greener Views. We're back with Robert Landis from Capital Media, but we're mostly talking about bicycling and cycling and being a cyclist in the Seattle area, and we've been talking about in general throughout the whole country. We were online a little bit during our break looking up the 1963 Schwinn Varsity bicycle, and we found that you can still get one, so that's pretty cool. And I was looking at the girls' version and didn't even realize it. I don't think that really mattered. We were actually trying to figure out what the bar, what'd you call the bar?
Top tube.
The top tube. What's up with that? Anyhow, we won't talk about that. So let's talk about the evolution of the bike seat. Where are we at with the bike seat now? I remember when I was a kid on that one trip I took to the lake was, I don't know, calling it a seat was pretty much a that's not really what it was. It was just something to keep me from sitting on the bar or the tube.
Well, there's been a lot of changes in bike seats, and a lot of it has to do with you know, the concern that it would have an impact on male virility. So there's been lots of efforts to create little seams or gaps on the seat itself to protect that part of the anatomy, which just seems to work okay. But I think there's probably more room for improvement over time. Most of the race bikes don't have that because, you know, they want their seats to be really tiny and small, and a lot of the racers basically are more out of the saddle than in the saddle, so it doesn't really matter for them. But I think if you're going to be riding every day, it's really, really important to spend some money on a good seat that's going to, you know, work with you well and your anatomy. Equally as important is getting a bike that fits. I mean, probably more so than anything, that's really going to contribute to your overall health and well-being than a seat. Because when a bike fits you well, you don't even notice that you're on a seat, pretty much. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I was always kind of tall and lanky, and I was always riding a bike that was likely way too small for me.
Yep.
What about clothes? You know, now I don't see a bicycler out there with some hip, flashy, colorful clothes and stuff. And I remember my biggest concern was not getting my elephant bells stuck in the chain.
Elephant bells, that's awesome. There's a, I mean, there's a huge variety. There's the hipster cyclist in Seattle that's wearing, you know, tall, skinny guy, typically, or girl, wearing a black T-shirt, black pair of ratty jeans, and, you know, some loafers, and, you know, they've got their U-lock in their back pocket, and that's, and they're, and no helmet, just a hat, you know, that's one category. Then there's the roadie, you know, and they're usually riding, the hipster is usually riding a single speed or a fixie, which is a very, very, difficult bike to ride around the city because it's only one speed. Then there's the roadie, which is somebody who's dressed like you say, the flashy guy with like the all the uniform, the spandex, the tights, the fancy shoes, the fancy bike, all that whole image, and they're racing around town like crazy. So it's this huge gap. And then there's a commuter guy, usually somebody in spandex wearing a yellow coat, riding their bike peacefully along. So it's a huge different, you know, a lot of different ways to dress when you ride a bike. Like today, I actually rode my bike today, and I was just dressed in regular street clothes. I think a lot of people are starting to do that more, and I think it's really encouraging to people who don't ride a bike normally because they say, oh, that guy looks like he could just go into the office. He's not all, like, tricked out in bike clothes. He can just get off his bike, walk in the office, and start his day. He doesn't have to, like, go and change and shower and stuff like that. So I think it can be I think bike clothes, depending on what you're doing, are important. But I think if you're just looking at commuting or transportation, you can just wear regular street clothes and get to the store or get to work and not worry about it.
Is there really some advantage to that sleek, you know, I mean, I think that stuff looks really cool and stuff, but it seems like it takes forever to put on and to take off and peel yourself in and out of them. Yeah. Is there really some advantage to that in certain bicycling situations?
I think if you're racing, there's a perception that if you're wearing skin-tight clothes, you'll be more aerodynamic and things like that. But, you know, honestly, it's like even saying if you have a really nice bike, it's going to make a difference. And it does make a difference to a certain degree. But it's all about who you are and your genetics and your athleticism. It's not really the bike or the clothes that make the difference.
And you're supposed to shave all your body hair, too.
That's right. Absolutely. Like... get it waxed or whatever.
What about the helmets? What's up with the helmets?
Yeah, that's a bit of controversy around helmets. of course, I think in King County, it's a law you have to wear a helmet. And, you know, for good reason. I've been in two bike wrecks myself, and I know that it protected me significantly from getting any sort of head damage when I actually got in those wrecks. But a lot of people say, especially in Europe, where people rarely wear a bike helmet, but they ride very differently there. So the style of riding is more, they're riding about half speed, like 5 to 6 miles an hour. They're all riding on bike lanes. They're all riding together. And the nice part about that is it allows people to come together just in their regular street clothes, and they use it as transportation. So they don't feel like they have to put on special clothes like we talked about, get on a special bike, do all that kind of extra few steps. They don't have to put on a helmet. They can just get out and ride. And it's fairly safe because they don't really interact with traffic that much. They're on a separate road. Seattle, U.S., very different. People are riding in the road. They're going much faster. So consequently, I highly encourage and highly recommend everybody wear a bike helmet here, for sure. Europe is a little different story.
Does it have any effect or alter the actual bike riding experience itself, having a helmet? Or?
You know, when I've ridden without a helmet, it's really nice to ride without a helmet.
Yeah.
It really feels nice to have the hair in your wind and your... the wind in your hair.
The hair in your wind's not so
shabby. The hair in your
wind,
that's
either.
Cool. But really, it's not that big a deal. Yeah. I mean, most helmets are so light, you know, it's no big deal.
And they have. I've seen them with the little radios and stuff in them now, too.
Yeah. I've got a helmet. I've got a camera on mine.
Yeah, I've seen that, too. Cool.
Yeah, a little camera.
So yeah, tell us, you were talking about your accidents. Relay your bicycle accident experience to us.
Yeah, I had a couple accidents. One in February of 2003, it was my fault, I'll admit it. I was riding on, I came into a four-way stop, and there was a car to my right, my immediate right, and I was getting a little impatient, so I decided I would go behind them, and they started moving forward, and I was going straight at their trunk. And they slammed on the brakes because they saw me, and I hit the back of the car, fell over the back of the trunk onto the ground. completely totaled my bike. I bent the frame in four places, and fortunately for me, I didn't hurt myself at all. The interesting thing I've discovered was that if I had hit anything besides a car, that my insurance company would not have reimbursed me for my bicycle, which was interesting. So that was one accident. More recently, in March of 2011, I actually got hit head-on by a car. And fortunately, I was going pretty slow. Actually, the car was going slow. I was going 16 miles an hour, so I was moving along quite quickly. But the car was in on an intersection. It was a stop sign. They were there. I saw them, and I was coming up, adjacent to them. And I put my head down thinking, okay, he's stopped. He's already sees me. And next thing I noticed was he was coming straight at me, and I hit his hood. And I went over the handlebars onto the hood of the car, and I fell on the ground. Fortunately, I had a backpack on and it protected me, and I was fine. But he once again broke my bike to shreds. It was like a very expensive bike, and I bent the frame in numerous places. And it was a hit and run. He took off. So I got his license number, and the police arrived. The police were really helpful, but then the guy called in and said, "Oh, my car was stolen a couple days ago," and it's one of these typical stories, so it was sad. But fortunately, I was okay. My insurance company, took care of me, and it was all good. I was lucky.
Yeah, people do not want to take personal responsibility when they think they killed somebody on a bicycle. It's just easier to say your car was stolen.
Later. Yeah.
Yeah. My friend Victoria just recently got into an accident. She got pretty injured on it and stuff, too, and it was a guy that but the guy took like full accountability and stuff and stopped and helped her and took her to the doctor and took her to the
to get
her bicycle repaired and everything and took responsibility and everything.
Good for him.
So nice. Yeah, I mean we ought to do a show specifically on personal responsibility. That would be a good one.
That'd be a really good one.
So how about any a particularly memorable to you or special to you races or fundraising type of bicycle situations that you've been involved in?
I haven't really raised any money. I used to run marathons, and I used to raise money for doing running, but not really on cycling so much. I've had some really memorable bike tour incidents, though.
Why don't you tell us about one of those?
I was in Utah. This was with my former wife, and we were up at a place called Cedar Breaks, if you know where that is. It's this beautiful place, and it was in September, and there was thunder and lightning's there quite frequently. And we're at like 14,000 feet elevation, so it was getting pretty cold. And there's this huge thunderstorm coming straight at us. And we walked out into this sightseeing point, and it says on the sign very clearly, it says, "If you see lightning, get back in your car." And we didn't have a car to get back into. We're on two bicycles, on these metal bicycles. So this storm was coming at us, and it was hailing cats and dogs. It was incredible, and the thunder and lightning was coming down on us, right on us. And so we're flat out laying on the ground, and kind of scared. What's going to happen with the thunder and lightning and everything? Anyway, we flagged a car down, and they actually put our bikes in the car, and they took us off. So that was a very scary incident on a bicycle. But in retrospect, it was kind of like, oh, it was kind of a fun thing, an adventure, a true adventure. So
that's a good answer. Life is filled with them.
It is.
If you open yourself up to the opportunity. Yeah. What about the Seattle to Portland? I know, wasn't that recently?
Back in July.
Have you run that before?
I've never done an organized bike ride.
Oh, is there a reason for that?
I like riding alone.
You're such a rebel, right?
Yeah, such a rebel, right. I kind of like the whole thing about like being out on my own.
Yeah.
And I do occasionally ride with friends, but I really like just the peace and quiet of getting on the road and riding. So,
do you find when you're with other riders, if you say you have done it before, do you find a sense of competition and stuff?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine who's like quite a bit younger than me that we used to race quite a bit, and that was fun. I mean, that was just pure out fun. So I really love doing that. Other people, not so much. Usually they're just starting off, and I like to encourage people to ride, so I'll ride with them at their pace, and it works out great.
Yeah. Great. So what advice would you give someone that's new to cycling or somebody that's interested in it?
Yeah, I would encourage you to try it out. I think I mentioned earlier, I would try getting a very inexpensive bike and learning how to really work it, fix it, like tune it up, fix it, clean it up, and then just go for a ride and just ride places you feel comfortable. Try places that you maybe go on a trail maybe go to the grocery store, maybe go try running errands, do things that are just kind of like things you would normally jump in your car to do and go try it out and see if you like it.
Oh, like when I go up for my soup at the end of the street?
Absolutely.
Instead of getting in my, like, work truck? I think that's fantastic.
Maybe you could walk there.
I can walk there. What a concept.
What a concept, yeah. It's a good concept.
And of course, call Cascade
yes.
Bicycle Club. Is that cascade.org or?
They have a kind of a strange website right now. But just Google Cascade Bicycle Club and you'll find it.
Great. Let's see. Well, I'm not sure if there's anything else in specific. What do you see for the future of bicycling and for the future of bicycling in Seattle and maybe just overall?
I think that bicycling will become more and more part of our overall transportation network. That's my great hope anyway. And I think there's a lot of good reasons, compelling reasons to get people to do it. It's healthy. It reduces pollution. It reduces congestion. And it's honestly, it's a lot of fun. And so I think if we can follow the bike master plan, which has it in mind, and if we start implementing that and encouraging people to try it out and see if they like it, I think people will enjoy it and they'll achieve a certain level of safety and comfort. And it's gonna solve some of the transportation problems that we're facing right now.
Hmm. I don't know if any of you guys remember, there was this really cheesy movie that came out. I believe it was in the 80s, but it was much more likely in the 70s. It was called Americathon. It was a movie about, it was extremely terrible, but I've seen it several times. But it was a movie about how things got, I don't know if it had to do with energy or what, but people stopped driving. And so everybody started walking and running and riding bicycles and everything. And did you see that as a possibility for?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, unless we go into some sort of global catastrophe in oil just because it doesn't become available anymore, then maybe that would happen. But
yeah.
I don't think that is realistic. I mean, if that would happen, you go to places like India and you see people, there's still a lot of automobiles there and motorcycles and things like that. You think in a country like that where petrol is so expensive, everybody would be on a bicycle, everybody would be walking, but it's not the case.
But also there's a relationship between people that are riding bicycles and pedestrians and cars. You see them, riding together and stuff, and it's not like, the vehicles and stuff are just riding over everything else. It's not a car. I think that's part of the problem that we have in our society.
Yeah, I mean, cars dominate.
Yeah.
I mean, the funding goes to cars. I mean, everything is oriented towards the car. Everything revolves. I mean, really, our lifestyles revolve around the automobile. And I think as that shifts, I think huge improvements could occur.
Great. Well, before we'll move into a little bit, we haven't really taken on the general Greener Views format, but yeah. I really have been loving this conversation, and thank you for indulging us in such. And
thank you.
Is there anything else before we move on to something else that you really wanted to say about bicycling and bicycles? And
I just would encourage people to like give it a try, just get an old bike, fix it up, give it a try and see if you like it.
Yeah, there's so many sales and so many people putting stuff out on their lawns and stuff in Seattle with free signs. It's you're bound to like, if you keep your eyes open well enough, you're bound to just like if you're in your car right now listening to this episode, of course it hasn't come out yet, but once it does, and just keep your eye on the side of the road a little bit, you might as well, you're likely to even find a bicycle or, the sales that people have, churches and stuff have sales and people
Absolutely.
Have these. I mean, in riding around in my neighborhood, I see dozens and dozens of yard sales and everything, and I see bicycles. $5-$10 and stuff like that, and I
Absolutely.
Imagine Craigslist probably has them for free and stuff like that too. So, yeah, that's great. Do you want to talk about just a little bit more about your computer and your web type of thing?
Sure, I can talk a little more of that.
Why don't you tell us how you got involved in that and what your primary objective is around that and your primary audience and
that's a great question.
Customer.
Actually, my focus right now has really shifted in the last year to more companies that are more involved with greener issues.
Mm.
And it's a little bit more comprehensive than that. For example, like one of the customers I'm working with right now sells Chinese herbal medicine. So it's kind of alternative medicine. We've done a lot of work for Cascade Bicycle Club, as a matter of fact. So my company's done that. And organizations that are like, in what I perceive to be doing is like forwarding something positive in the world, similar to what you're doing with your podcast, is really, really important to me. And that's really what I want to focus on with my company. And that's the kind of projects I'm looking forward to doing. Art is another big thing, too. We're bidding on a project for Bainbridge Island Art Institute. We're looking at doing their website. So organizations like that really, I feel like, not only is it a great project, but it will have some sort of positive impact in the world.
So, yeah, that's great. So as a business person, have you found it possible to be reasonably successful in life and do stuff that has some responsibility element and some art element
great
in it
question.
As well?
That's a great question. I think it becomes a little bit more challenging because some of those organizations are more challenged financially than like the big, you know, corporations or even larger companies. But I think, you know, honestly, at my age and at this point in my life, what I want to do, it's more important for me to go after organizations like that and support them than it is to try and make a lot of money. So that's what I really want to focus on, and I am focusing on those organizations that make a difference.
But it's by no means impossible
no. To
have some degree of success by doing that, because regardless of what people are doing, if it's an established business, they have to get that stuff done somehow.
Yes, and for organizations like that, the web is quite an inexpensive tool to make a huge difference. Seattle Tilth is another organization.
Mm.
I'm not working with them directly right now, but they are an organization that I would love to work with at some point in the time because they're about growing food. And what a more natural thing than growing food. And I just love what they're up to. It just gets me inspired. I'm also doing some work for the city of Seattle right now. I'm actually doing an animation for them on climate change. Mm. That'll be coming out in January. So that's another project I'm really excited about. And we just locked in a contract with a major recording artist to actually do the voiceover for it. So I'm really excited about that as well. So these kinds of things, I mean, that's one of the motivations, one of the reasons I wanted to be on this show is to talk about this, because I believe in, you know, greener businesses, sustainability. I think that there's lots of possibilities out there, and, you know, that's my goal.
Yeah, I do believe it's possible for this, like, hippy dippy mindset to coexist with the rest of society if you you know take the right moves and stuff and how did you get involved in the media thing? Is that something that you've always done or
no it isn't. I actually used to work for a big company and I was laid off in one of the many layoffs cycles that happened, and so I was just looking for, okay, what do I want to do now with my life? And I met an individual who I actually hired to do a website for a smaller project that I had, and he asked me if I wanted to partner and get to work on building websites. And I said, yeah, that'd be a great idea. So this guy just kind of fell into it that way, and I started to go out there and sell the business, and I was managing the business, and he was doing the work, and that's how it started.
So you're good in selling and managing, huh? That's a really good thing. That's something that's good to be good at.
Yeah, well.
So what is the motto or the mission statement for your life, for Robert Landis?
Wow, you're asking some big, deep questions.
You better believe it. We don't mess around here on Green Reviews.
That's a really good question. It revolves around something to do with making a dent or a difference. I mean, Steve Jobs said making a dent, but it has to do with making a difference. So having some sort of tangible impact somewhere, whether it's with food or herbal medicine or even some areas of spirituality that I'm very excited about, meditation, wherever it may be, I want to have some sort of impact there. I'm not really concerned about making the big impact, but like having a impact. As opposed to just kind of like going along in life and not really accomplishing anything that I feel like does make an impact. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense to me. And as a matter of fact, I see the actual big impact as being pretty subjective, because some of us that may do something that might seem on its face value pretty small might have an effect on somebody else or inspire somebody else that may actually do something that might be deemed the big impact. And so ultimately, we're all connected and we're all related and we're all in this together. So there isn't really any of us doing anything that's really bigger or smaller than anybody else.
Like the show. I mean, you could have somebody on this show that gets inspired and does something, and you may never even know about it.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay, they just did this thing. I mean, we don't even know. So.
Yeah. Well, that's how I started this, because I'd heard other people and met other people that were doing something similar to this. Maybe not this type of topic and stuff, but we're doing podcasts and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I want to do something like that. And then I decided that I wanted it to, you know, attempt to have some kind of an impact. So
yeah, good for you.
Yeah, well, we're all in this together. Is there somebody, any one particular person that has had a great impact on your life?
Yeah, I would say two people, actually. Jim Maynard, who was my ninth grade PE coach.
Sweet.
Who used to say every day in class, that which is not exercised will atrophy. And he used to say it to the point where we would hate listening to him say that every day. But it really resonated with me, and it really stuck with me in terms of exercise. The other person had been Yvon Chouinard, who's the founder of Patagonia. And he's a businessman with morals, which can be an oxymoron at times. But he really, really is an incredible man and put together a phenomenal organization, Patagonia, and has done some really creative and important things in the world. And so I admire those two people.
Great. What about a recent book or movie that's been inspirational to you?
That's a great question. I'm listening to a book now by Seth Godard, and it's on linchpins. And it's a very interesting book. I don't know if you know who Seth Godard is. He's kind of a marketing guru.
No, and I don't know what a linchpin is either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a linchpin is a, I mean, in the construction world is like a piece of equipment that is really, really crucial to holding something together.
Oh, okay.
That's a very inexpensive part.
I do know what a linchpin is. I'm in the construction industry.
You should know. So,
isn't that the thing that didn't work out so well with that bridge, in a sense, that fell apart?
Oh, could be. Bad linchpin.
It was some type of pin, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Anyhow, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So anyway, so this book is really good. It's called Linchpin, and it's about how his assertion is that to become successful in an organization or in life is to take more of an approach of being an artist. So an artist to life, as opposed to being a cookie cutter, you know, businessman, kind of stamping out the same thing over and over. And I'm very inspired by that, because it just seems like that is true. I mean, being more artistic in your life and being also he talks a lot about giving gifts. Like just giving people gifts throughout the day, like saying thank you when you don't necessarily want to, or you're smiling at the checkout clerk, or whatever those sorts of things. Simple things, but they really make a difference.
Yeah, well, it's the golden rule. You know, giving to others that which we ultimately want for ourselves.
Absolutely.
As well. Sweet.
Absolutely.
How do you maintain a hopeful and a positive attitude in your life?
That's a great – yes, great questions. sometimes I think meditation is the core for me. Mm. I think meditation is where I reflect on my day, or actually before I go to work, I usually meditate. So reflecting before my day starts. And it gives me a basis of reflection to say, okay, this is a day in my life. And what's really important to me is the connection I'm going to make with people and the connection to myself. And that is the context for the day. It's not about how much money I make or how successful I am or all those other things. It's more about that connection. And that's what I think keeps me looking at things in a very positive light.
Sweet. So give us one thing that most any person can do that would have a positive impact in the world.
One thing. Gosh, just one?
give us as many as you choose.
Yeah.
At least one thing.
Yeah.
I need to rephrase that.
Yeah. Well, I think that...
Give us 400 things that people can do to make the world a better place.
goodness, that's great. What we're talking about tonight, I think riding a bike is a really, really powerful thing. And I think if you use it as a transportation alternative, it's a powerful thing. I would highly recommend that. I've also mentioned meditation. I think meditation is a brilliant thing to do. There's all sorts of different forms and things that you can do. But I think that meditation is a really powerful thing. And I'm going to end it too.
Great. So how do people get a hold of you?
Okay. You can reach me at my website, which is capitalmedia.com. And it's CAPITOL. media.com, or my business number is 206-963-2580.
Okay, super.
Yeah.
Do you do any like blogging or anything like that, or have you in the past?
I have not done any blogging.
Okay.
So I don't do that.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Super. Well, listen, thank you so much. It's been a delight. Is there any like last words or words of wisdom or sage-like thing that you want to put out there before we go?
You know, I think you asked me the sage-like thing questions and asking what my deeper passion is and what keeps me positive. So I think I can leave it at that. But thank you very much for having me on the show. I think this is a really positive thing, and I'm really glad that you're out there, you know, taking a crack at making a difference in a really powerful way. We need more people like this doing this ongoingly to keep that connection going and just keep spreading the word.
Well, you're very welcome. Well, I certainly don't do it on my own, and I couldn't do it on my own otherwise. So super. Well, we've been here with Robert Landis from Capital Media, talking not so much about Capital Media, but mostly about really cool bicycle stuff. And this has been episode 48 of Greenerviews. And on behalf of Randy and Michael and myself, we say thank you. If you'd like to contact us for sponsorship or to advertise or any kind of feedback or talk about being a future guest, call us at 206-650-4587 or email us info@greenerviews.net. Please check out ambrosiadigitalmedia.com and healthyhomecast.com. So good night. Thank you. We love you. And I thought of something really cool the other night to end out with, but I forgot it, so never mind. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video producer is Michael Schwartz of AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by SlapJazz.com, DanFajans.bandcamp.com, and JDHobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.